normally, as you know, we have more people in D.C. than we have in Juneau during that time frame, and that won't be the case this year.
Lawmakers will not take part in the Energy Council gathering this year. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 20th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a day to honor the late Tlingit elder, Walter Sobolev.
He performed a marriages of our people. He gave comfort when there was sorrow. He stood by us. How else can we honor him?
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.gov.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
State lawmakers will not be getting a spring break this year, APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
Traditionally, the legislature puts everything on hold for 1 week in March to attend a meeting of the Energy Council in Washington, D.C. It's been going on for so long that many lawmakers and staff don't even know when it started. But now it ends. House Speaker Mike Chenault announced on Thursday that the break would not be happening this year.
It's my intent that the House continues to work.
Chenault says there will be floor sessions and committee hearings during the first week of March. His counterpart in the Senate, Charlie Huggins, has also resolved to work through Energy Council.
Normally, as you know, we have more people in D.C. than we have in Juneau during that time frame, and that won't be the case this year.
In 2013, a third of the legislature attended Energy Council, 10 from the House and 10 from the Senate. This year, just 6 representatives from the House and 3 from the Senate are scheduled to go to D.C. Huggins says with weighty subjects like education and the development of a natural gas pipeline under consideration, many lawmakers wanted to stay in Juneau this year. On top of that, leadership is hoping to gavel out in less than 90 days. The session is currently scheduled to end on Easter Sunday, and Huggins would like to close out before the holiday.
We want to stay here, we want to work hard, and our reward may be able to get out a day or so early.
Huggins says money is not a factor in this travel decision. Expense reports from previous years show the cost usually exceeds $2,000 per legislator. The Energy Council is an association of energy-producing states in the Americas that meets quarterly. The spring conference in Washington, D.C. is scheduled to run from March 6th through March 9th. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Alaska minority Democrats today offered their own education package that includes an increase in base student allocation and allows charter schools to be located within neighborhood schools when space is available. Incorporated in the set of bills will be an increase of the base student allocation to $404 per student, a one-time grant of $500 for charter schools to assist with startup costs, and a requirement for traffic control at and around school zones. Democratic lawmakers hope the allocation increase will hold off teacher layoffs for next year. The bills will be introduced Friday, more than a third of the way into the session. Senator Berta Gartner, a Democrat from Anchorage, says of the timing, good things take a long time to happen. The oil and gas drilling out East End Road in Homer is over. Buccaneer has declared a dry hole and has no more plans to explore there. Still at issue is Buccaneer's future and what obligation the state has to foot the bill for the dry hole. The state also financed an offshore drilling rig that is now Buccaneer's major asset. We have a report from KBBI's Aaron Selbig in Homer.
It wasn't long ago that officials with Australia-based Buccaneer Energy were very excited about the company's prospects at West Eagle.
We've gone in, we've prepped all the roads, we've got the site ready, we have broken down the rig, we are getting ready to move the rig down to the West Eagle area.
That's Buccaneer CEO Curtis Burton speaking to investors in a video uploaded to YouTube back in November.
We have both oil and gas targets at West Eagle, which is one of the reasons we're excited about it. And so we like the idea that we can move down to West Eagle, drill, and prove up one of the last remaining structures in the region that if it's typical to the other structures like it that have been drilled on the peninsula, it will be hydrocarbon bearing.
After weeks of drilling, however, Buccaneer officials admitted Monday that the West Eagle prospect has fallen short of their expectations. In a news release, officials said that after drilling to a level of 3,700 feet, the company did not find the hydrocarbon reserves that had been hoped for. As a result, Buccaneer is calling it quits at West Eagle. It will be plugging and abandoning the only well it dug there. The disappointing results come after Buccaneer spent more than $9.4 million to mobilize at West Eagle. Those costs include more than $1.8 million to improve sections of East End Road and build a camp at the drilling site. Buccaneer says the state of Alaska will be on the hook for more than half of that total, thanks to the return of bond funds and expected payment of tax credits through ACES. In his quarterly report, Burton said Buccaneer has so far recovered $30.5 million from the state, with another $24.5 million co-invested on its Endeavor jackup rig through the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Officials with Buccaneer Energy did not return telephone calls in time for this story, but in Monday's news release, Burton said the company would now focus its attention on its offshore leases at Tyonic Deep and its onshore operation at Kenai Loop. Kenai Loop has been one of the company's few success stories in Alaska, but even that project has come under a shadow. Court hearings are scheduled for later this week to settle ownership disputes about the wells between Buccaneer, Cook Inlet Region Incorporated, and the Alaska Mental Health Trust. In a statement, the Buccaneer Board of Directors said the failure at West Eagle would force it to seek out additional working capital, which could include the sale of existing assets. The company needs that money in order to make a scheduled payment to the Chicago investment firm Meridian Capital by June 30th. Reporting from Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Buccaneer's claims for state funding could end up in court. The State Revenue Department says the company failed to meet deadlines and is not entitled to collect at least one of the performance bonds it paid. Buccaneer contends that actions by the state government were part of the reason for the delay. Yesterday, the state Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a lawsuit that halted a voter-passed law requiring health care providers to notify parents of minors before performing abortions. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
The legal case centers on privacy grounds and equal protection grounds. Planned Parenthood attorney Janet Krebs said the law would end up discriminating because it subjects a minor seeking an abortion to a delay that would not be faced by a pregnant minor simply seeking prenatal care.
The idea that the state can discriminate among pregnant minors because the health interests of some are more important than others cannot be a legitimate distinction. Properly framed, the question is whether the state has a legitimate interest in delaying access to health care for one group while allowing unimpeded access for another. The answer is clearly no.
Krebs said women in those two situations should be considered similarly situated. Arguing for the initiative sponsors, attorney Kevin Clarkson said they were not similarly situated. The only time a delay would be involved is if a pregnant minor made a choice.
There is the issue of the choice. You know, once you're pregnant, you really don't have a choice to not have a baby other than abortion. So the focal of the law is on the abortion choice because that's the choice once they're pregnant.
Assistant Attorney General Margaret Payton Walsh told the Supreme Court that the state's interest in justifying the delay was family cohesion. The judicial bypass provision of the law, which allows minors to get an abortion without the consent of their parents if certain criteria were met, was also a point of contention. Defendant's attorney Clarkson says the clear and convincing evidence standard must be adequately applied because there is more at stake during the judicial bypass proceeding than the girl's reproductive freedom.
It is her parents' fundamental right to the care, custody, and control of their minor daughter. It's a fundamental right that both the U.S. Supreme Court and this court have recognized. They have absolutely no opportunity to be heard. They don't even know that they have a reason to be heard because they don't even know it's taking place. The absolute minimum that we can do in this law is to tell the judge when you make your decision, be sure.
Janet Krebs disagreed, saying the argument over parental rights was framed incorrectly.
The parental notice law burdens fundamental rights of minors in order to increase parental involvement. But parental rights don't add to that interest. They're not an enforceable right. Mr. Clarkson referred to it as the parents' fundamental rights being adjudicated, but that is not true.
The parental notification law was voted into effect through an initiative after a parental consent law was ruled unconstitutional. In Anchorage, with help from Steve Heimel, I'm Josh Edge.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage Assembly candidate works to resolve allegations that he broke campaign laws.
You know, I just want to get finished with this so I can get back on the campaign trail.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
Mao Tosi's campaign for an East Anchorage Assembly seat was under scrutiny by Alaska Public Offices Commission officials today. They held a hearing to address allegations of violations filed in a complaint on Tuesday. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The 15-count complaint was filed Tuesday by John E. Lewis, who requested expedited review. However, Lewis withdrew his request for expedited review because of his unavailability to attend Thursday's hearing telephonically or in person. Attorney Elizabeth Hickerson, chair of the commission, told TOSI they would try to resolve the matter as soon as possible.
And what we think is the best thing is for the staff to work with the complainant and the respondent and come up with procedures and timelines that will help us resolve this matter as quickly before the election as possible.
Tosi, a former NFL football player and activist who manages the Northway Mall and runs the nonprofit Alaska Pride Youth Programs, jumped into the race against sitting Assemblymember Adam Trombley and candidate Pete Peterson at the last minute. Tosi sat with APOC staff directly after the hearing to begin resolving the allegations.
With APOC officials, we're going through each one to ensure that we have taken care of these. And once that's done, then I think we're okay. You know, I just want to get finished with this so I can get back on the campaign trail.
Allegations in the complaint include making campaign expenditures before filing for office, not properly identifying political ads like bumper stickers were paid for by his campaign, and using his position at the Northway Mall to benefit his campaign, among other things. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
A bill to establish Walter Sobolev Day in Alaska cleared a state House committee today after lawmakers on the panel heard heartfelt testimony from the late Tlingit elder's friends and family. The bill does not have any more committee stops before a vote on the House floor. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand President Bill Martin recalled listening to Walter Sobolev's church services on the radio as a child growing up in Cake.
His delivery was low-key, and his message was simple. Love your neighbor, for love is God.
Sobolev was the first Alaska Native minister in Juneau at a time when the town was segregated. He became a cultural and spiritual leader in the community and statewide, impressing both Natives and non-Natives with his teachings. Selena Everson with the Alaska Native Sisterhood said Sobolev meant everything to the Native community in Southeast Alaska.
He performed a marriages of our people. He gave comfort when there was sorrow. He stood by us. How else can we honor him?
All 4 of Sobolev's children testified before the House State Affairs Committee. Son Ross said his father always told him to feed his spirit.
I think he fed the spirit of people from many walks of life, in his church and in his service, and sometimes as chaplain at this legislature.
House Bill 217 would make November 14th Walter Sobolev Day in Alaska. That was the day he was born in 1908. Sobolev died in 2011 at the age of 102. The bill's prime sponsor is Sitka Democrat Jonathan Kreis Tompkins.
He truly was a towering figure in the Native community statewide through the Alaska Federation of Natives, through the early Native civil rights movement.
Kreis Tompkins envisioned Sobolev Day as similar to Elizabeth Paratovich Day. Alaskans just celebrated Paratovich on February 16th, the day territorial governor Ernest Greening signed the 1945 Alaska Anti-Discrimination Act, which Paratovich championed.
That's noted in a lot of schools, the history of anti-discrimination legislation in the state or territory of Alaska. It's really how groups, schools, institutions choose to honor or observe the person and what the person represented.
There's recent precedent for the legislation. Last year, lawmakers created J. Hammond Day to honor Alaska's self-proclaimed bush rat governor. In 2011, the legislature established Ted Stevens Day, honoring the state's longtime U.S. senator. HB 217 has several co-sponsors, including every House member from Southeast Alaska. After the hearing, State Affairs Committee Chair Representative Bob Lynn and Vice Chair Representative Wes Keller said they would sign on, too. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Earlier today, pairs of snow machines began zipping out of Nome to continue the second leg of the 2014 Iron Dog Snow Machine Race. KNOM's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Nome is the halfway mark of the 2,031-mile Iron Dog, known as the longest, toughest snow machine race in the world. First to leave at exactly 8 a.m. this morning was team number 10, Chris Olds, and Nome's own Mike Morgan. Teams were heading out of town throughout the day based on their arrival and wrench times. 31 of the original 38 teams made it to Nome. This year was predicted to be one of the toughest races on record, with open water in areas of no snow. Kevin Kastner, Iron Dog Executive Director, says the hype concerning this year's rough conditions actually worked to the competitors' advantage. The concern upped the racers' caution, keeping most of them in the race.
Really, the caution and all of the concern, I think, in the end, is what allowed most of these teams to get to Nome, was the fact that they were so worried and so cautious, there was so much hype. I think they throttled back just a little bit, and I think that's what allowed them to actually survive to this point.
Kastner says, though there's no typical Iron Dog, on average one-third or more of the racers do not make it to Nome. This year beat those odds. And though only halfway through the race, Kastner says already it's one of the better Iron Dogs he's seen.
Given the rough conditions, given the caution, given the number of competitors and the strong teams, and the relatively minimal damage that we've seen, by all accounts, it's a great race this year, and it's clean. The sportsmanship is fantastic. I think it's one of our better years, even though it's a tough one.
So far, 28 teams remain in the running, 10 teams have scratched, and only one will finish first in Fairbanks on Saturday. Reporting from Nome, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The first section of the road into Denali National Park is open. The 90-mile road is usually closed beyond the park entrance area during the winter, but as of this past weekend, it's being kept plowed to mile 12 at the Mountain Vista Rest Area. Park spokeswoman Chris Pfister says it's part of an experiment.
For the next, say, 3 to 5 years, to see if there are visitors who will take advantage of the enhanced winter access into the park.
The Park Service began requesting comments regarding interest last year in operation of tours along the newly opened stretch of road, but Pfister says so far there hasn't been much feedback.
Today, we have not received any applications that for people who are interested in doing that, but it is not a lengthy process, and it's something that probably could happen pretty quickly if someone determines that it's something they would like to do.
Pfister says the extra road access allows winter visitors to begin backcountry dog sled, snowshoe, and ski treks from a little deeper in the park, something she says people have been taking immediate advantage of over the weekend. A California man faces federal charges after Anchorage police arrested him trying to retrieve cocaine and heroin that had been shipped to a motel. 27-year-old Marky Allen is scheduled to appear in U.S. District Court in Anchorage tomorrow on drug possession and distribution charges. Police say employees at the downtown Motel 6 called saying Allen had boxes delivered after he checked out Wednesday. Federal charging documents say Allen checked back into the motel and tried to retrieve the packages. Officers contacted him and canine units indicated the packages held drugs. Police got a search warrant for the packages and say they found a kilogram of cocaine and a half kilogram of heroin. Police say it has a street value of $400,000.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions are important members of the state's workforce. From healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants, Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages Alaska employers to consider ways in which Trust beneficiaries and their unique skills can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
The trial of a Kodiak man charged in the fatal shooting of two men at a Coast Guard station has been postponed. James Wells' trial was to have started Monday, but has been postponed until March 31st. Assistant U.S. Attorney Kevin Feldis says the trial in Anchorage will likely take several weeks. Federal prosecutors will not seek the death penalty if Wells is convicted. Wells is charged in the shooting of Coast Guardsman Petty Officer First Class James Hopkins and retired Chief Petty Officer Richard Belisle in April 2012. The 62-year-old Wells faces six felony charges, two counts each of first-degree murder, murder of a U.S. officer, and use of a firearm in a violent crime. He has pleaded innocent to all the charges. The Salty Dog Yacht Rally is coming to Alaska this summer. Wrangell is the official end point of the rally and will be the hub of boats and merriment for 4 days in June. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Former commercial fisherman and Salty Dog Rally Alaska founder Donnie Pack says this event is a long time coming.
This is Johnny, known aka Snack Snack South, Neck Neck T-Gal, and it's a 15-year-plus dream. All my years of out of Southside, Bristol Bay, Neck Neck, egg, you know, Clark's Point, blah, 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 and running downhill. We always loved breezing by Wrangell and the great, fabulous Wrangell Narrows. And since I've converted about 18 years ago to the yachting white boat from commercial, been a dream to get all these yahoos to come up to Alaska.
Pack says yachters from around North America will join together for this epic trip up the Inside Passage. And by around North America, she means around North America.
Oh my gosh. Okay. God only knows, because they're boats. They go around the world everywhere, right? So we've got Florida. It doesn't believe they belong to Mexico. Some in Mexico, some in California, Oregon, Washington. One guy is in New York, so he needs to hurry up and get around. He'll come over on either Seven Star or United Yacht Transport, one of the transport companies out of Fort Lauderdale over to Vancouver. So they'll just cruise through the Panama Canal and then flop over here.
All the boats will flop up to Seattle, where the rally begins on June 4th. From there, the group will head up the Northwest coast, stopping in Anacortes, Sydney, False Bay, Campbell River, Port McNeil, Cape Caution, Bella Bella, Green Inlet, and Prince Rupert. The ralliers will first set foot on Alaskan soil 2 weeks later in Ketchikan on June 15th. Then they'll bring their boats, and Pack says their personalities, to Wrangell, arriving 2 days later. Wrangell is the official endpoint of the rally, but just the beginning of the festivities, according to Wrangell's Economic Development Director, Carol Rushmore.
So we're working with the tribe to do a Chief Shakes tribal house tour and performance, and then also do a traditional foods dinner. So hopefully that will work out. There's going to be a golf tournament with a barbecue dinner and some entertainment offered. The charter guys will be offering different types of tour trips, and we'll get them signed up for some of those things. Bonnie Demersion has offered to volunteer leading a bird walk. There's some other sort of activities that we're looking at trying to do spaced throughout the 4 days that they're going to be here.
Rumor has it there's also a poker night and pub crawl in the works. With about 16 boats already registered for the rally, and hopefully double that as the final count, that's going to be a lot of people visiting these small communities looking for good times and good memories. And that's good for Wrangell's economy. Carol Rushmore says that the special activities are either being donated or paid for by the yachters themselves.
So you're looking at quite a number of people that will be here through this four-day event that will be spending time within the community. So it's actually a really a neat opportunity to provide an economic impact to the community as well as, you know, get Wrangell's name out there.
Cindy Waddington of the Wrangell Chamber of Commerce says she hopes the ralliers will support local businesses while they're in town.
The Chamber is one of the sponsors for the event because we are hoping that having all these people come to town will promote our economy.
She says it's particularly good timing for the rally as 4th of July preparations will be in full swing. That means food booths, activities, and of course, royalty raffle tickets. Rally founder Donnie Pack says that's why she chose Wrangell for the big party. In exchange for being a welcoming community, she hopes the rally will bring money and recognition.
The town has just been so supportive, so we're very happy to breeze by and make Wrangell our official hub. So there's a lot of boots on the ground, a ton of support, a ton of encouragement in the lower 48 and through Southeast Alaska. And it's just been a long, long dream that's finally coming into fruition.
So put your sea legs on, because the Salty Dog Rally arrives in Wrangell on June 17th. There will be an optional extra salty leg to Petersburg and Juneau from the 21st to the 24th for those who want to keep on yachting. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Aaron Selbig in Homer, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Steve Heimel and Josh Edge from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Electronic health records free Alaskans from the paper chase by giving doctors, nurses, and families secure access to medical information when and where they need it. Electronic health records increase safety and security. Electronic records take health information out of the filing cabinet and into the digital light. You can find out more at ak-ehealth.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in partnership with the Alaska eHealth Network. There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.